The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
We are back for the final hour. It's been a lot of interesting topics from Jimbo Fisher earlier to Pete Thamel now from Yahoo. Definitely want to talk about the tournament in the upcoming weekend. But Pete's latest involved who else but Mark Emmert and the foibles of the NCAA president, from a bungled television deal to what is currently going on with the investigation now into the inequities of the women's tournament. A law firm has been hired to look into things that you would seemingly think that Emmert would have been in charge of. The headline on Pete's column: Mark Emmert's $3.5 billion mistake will define his failed tenure. Pete, it's easy to pile on about what is going on with the women's tournament, but what you pointed out is just truly bizarre. I was not really even aware of it until your column. Thanks for the time tonight. I want to talk about the tournament in a minute, but inform the audience who has not read your column, and I'm sure that doesn't include many, exactly what Emmert did recently that cost his organization, I'll let you fill in the blanks, billions of dollars.
Well, Paul, I think at this point, if you cover college sports, you have a passing or casual knowledge of the minor and TV contracts, right? That's they are part of the billion-dollar engine that makes college sports go round. And it was 2016, and the NCAA tournament TV contract, which was a multi-billion-dollar deal with CBS and Turner at the time, had 8 years left on it, and Emmert went ahead with the gentleman who was in charge of championships at the time, and they basically went ahead and extended it out from 24 to 32. And by extending it out, they stuck with the current partners at CBS and Turner, and did not take the NCAA tournament to market. And by not taking it to market, especially the market that they would be entering right now in the wake of this latest NFL deal and the latest NHL deal, which were just blockbuster deals, they took essentially 2.5% incremental raises every year for those final years. So by the end, it was a pretty big number. So at the time, it was like a happy headline. Emmert did a media parade around with the folks from CBS and Turner. So, fast forward 5 years, and that deal is really slated to be remembered, according to the experts who really live in this stuff, as one of the worst in recent sports history. By only taking 2% increases, they essentially handed CBS a bargain without any negotiation, without any bidding. And the weird part is they did it so long ago, like it didn't even have a chance to see what the market may look like. And so, the estimates are that, conservatively, they could have got 100% off the $770 million they were getting a year. And quite frankly, the market's so dynamic right now, there's really a potential they could have got a lot more. And, at a time when Jim Delaney taught us everybody to go short, because going short is going to get you the best deal, they went long. And the ACC television deal that they're in now at the ACC network is similarly fraught, and it is going to just look worse and worse as the years go by and as your competitors are starting to make more money. And the shame of this, Paul, is it's really not going to change the financial paradigm of Alabama, Notre Dame, or USC, or places like that. What it's really going to do is hurt the very many schools that subsist on NCAA tournament units and NCAA tournament revenue distribution. And those billions that they've lost out on because of really just poor tactics and negotiation are going to especially hurt like the Atlantic 10 and the WCC, Gonzaga's League out west, the Missouri Valley. I mean, those are essentially leagues that live on basketball and live on units, and not to mention the distribution that goes to the other divisions. It's the lifeblood of college athletics. And so it's really, in hindsight, and again, it's hindsight, but in hindsight, it is looked at now as a massive error, and by 2029. It's going to just be looked at as a basement bargain deal. And by then, Emmert will be long gone. But just the way it was conveyed to me was essentially every year that goes by, we're going to remember this aspect of the failure of his tenure more and more, because the poor finances are just going to be more and more glaring.
Talking to Pete, and by the way, Pete, 2.5% is great for your granddad having a CD at the local bank, but not exactly what's happening in a bull market.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And I think, too, the NCAA is not going to invest in Bitcoin with its tournament, right? Like, they are going to be generally risk-averse because that tournament means so much to so many. But the fact that they just basically capitulated and, the theory, of course, going around, Paul, is that Emmert had just got there and he kind of wanted his own flag to plant. And this was his own, his own deal, he could say, and, beat himself on the chest. And not coincidentally, he got a healthy raise not long after, just like a lot of these commissioners over the years have gotten big raises tied to billion-dollar deals. And so you do wonder if some personal vanity or greed or jealousy of others in administrative parts of college sports making that kind of money factored in some small way into that very bad decision. Mark Lewis is the gentleman who ran championships the other day, and somewhat hilariously, he's in the liquor industry in Bozeman, Montana right now. So the Ringer can go find him.
Yeah, I don't know if I lived in Bozeman.
Write a delightful story about the deal broker who's costing the NCAA billions.
Pete, I mean, it's no longer really a challenging question to ask you what Mark Emmert has done wrong. I mean, I think the tougher question is what he's done right, but I'll save that for another day. Let me get your thoughts on the recent kerfuffle. Maybe that might even be a kind word to describe Mark Emmert since about a week ago when the story first came out about the women's tournament. How would you describe what he has done and said in the process, and what will it eventually mean on top of everything else?
Two defining thoughts on this. One is the lawyers always win, right? Like, there's no more Mark Emmert NCAA move than to panic and bring in a law firm, right? Like, oh my God, the feds are investigating our most important sport. Let's bring in Condoleezza Rice. Let's bring in someone from the outside. Let's shelter me from any responsibility or accountability, right? It's just like the classic go-to move. The last report that I could find of their legal spendings was $54 million a couple years ago, annually. $54 million, Paul. Think about that. That's an astounding amount of money. Now, look, big corporations have legal bills. I get it. I certainly don't expect them, expect them to be pennies. But just it's just so instinctive for this organization to go in the fetal position. And we had a long talk about this on the Yahoo Sports College podcast this week. We actually had two. Pat Forty, who was on the pod with us, his daughter's a swimmer at Stanford. That no one has done more for women's athletics than the NCAA in the world in the past two generations. I cannot think of a single entity that has provided more opportunity and invested more money in women's athletics than the NCAA. Can you disagree with that, Paul?
No, and that's why this was so surprising.
Through scholarships.
I agree.
It is a wonderful organization. One of the great things about this men's basketball tournament is that it allows there to be a dynamic soccer tournament, field hockey tournament. There's lower profile men's sports that benefit from it as well. But the NCAA's track record for helping women and giving opportunity to women in women's sports is something that should be celebrated. And so it just speaks to how clumsy and thin-skinned Mark Emmert is that he couldn't have just gone on a plane and flown to San Antonio, done a TikTok with the woman from Oregon who initially posted the video about the lack of equity, helped provide some answers, and had an opportunity to tell a really positive NCAA story. That story is there and it's real. And, I mean, it's why you hear from him so frequently. We often joke on the podcast that they keep him in bubble wrap in a room in Indianapolis and then dust him off for the once a year he has to speak, because he just really does pretty much every opportunity he has a chance to say something, he says something wrong. And he has a really glaringly bad quality for a high-profile leader, and that he's very thin-skinned. So he couldn't just own the mistake, address it, and move on. He had to go back to some business council in Indianapolis and be like, well, once the video gets out, and play the victim and blame social media. Like, he just really doesn't have the leadership instincts of how to in the vision of how to handle situations like this. So I really think at this point, Paul, like, criticizing Mark Emmert is just, it's, you're just yelling into the wind. I really think the criticism here comes to the presidents who are his bosses. It starts with Jack DeGoya at Georgetown, and then President Moorhead at Georgia is one of them. President Chancellor Blank at Wisconsin is one of them. These are the people who are aiding and abetting him, and I think the focus eventually has to go to, how is this guy allowed to make millions and offer nothing of value? Because he essentially has offered very little value from a leadership perspective for many of the past, I think he's been there 11 years. So I can't remember a moment where he's been relevant other than to redirect to a committee or redirect to a panel. And look, it's not a job inherent with power. And that's why you do need some charisma and you do need some ability to galvanize. And instead, he's just shown the ability to survive. And it's kind of similar, Paul, to how Larry Scott survived in the Pac-12. You know, a bunch of these presidents get on and, you know, they go to cocktail parties during non-COVID times. And they're like, oh, college athletics are great. College athletics are great. But they're not really invested in it. And they don't really know what's going on. And then they cycle off and new ones cycle on. And nobody really digs in and says, do we have an issue here? Do we need to change it? Is this guy worth the millions of dollars that we're paying him? And so presidential ambivalence is really at the root of why Mark Emmert is still employed. If you polled, I guess, what do we call it now? Power Five athletic directors, and you can meld basketball in there too. I would think his approval rating is under 10%. I can't fathom just the conversations I have every day with people. It's just the problem is that job has been marginalized so much. The commissioners don't really need him. Like, they're way more powerful than him now. And so people don't waste a lot of time on Mark Emmert because that job doesn't have a ton of power, and he's a bit checked out.
Well, not to get to Machiavellian here at the end, but you've somewhat answered what I was going to ask you. I mean, in a way, the Power Five commissioners and those powerful presidents are probably happy with them there, because do they really want somebody who is respected and could impact and influence change in intercollegiate athletics as opposed to them doing it?
It's a good question, and that might be a little too dark. he hasn't done enough to. It's hard to get presidents to do anything, right? They want committees to set up the committees to find a committee to where to hold the committee meeting, right? College presidents are not decisive people. They are extremely risk averse, and quite frankly, they're busy with their day jobs. So I fully expect Mark Emmert to just run out the string on this contract here. Like, there are no forces other than, you know, there'll be a parade of media columns, pointing out his inadequacies, and there are many. Dana O'Neill did a great one on The Athletic this week. But there is no real momentum there, because the people who could cause that momentum just don't have enough interest in it. But what he's done is basically fought very hard behind the scenes through those tens of millions, really hundreds of millions of dollars spent on legal fees to keep the collegiate model the way it is, because that's how the presidents want it. That's really been his job, and that's why he's kept it.
Mm. So much more to unpack.
But it was an existential threat 18 months ago, name, image, and likeness to right. College athletics. Existential threat. It was not a great read of the room. I mean, it's normal that a bunch of athletes are wearing "we're not property" shirts. Like, that's normal. Like, it's not even that big of a deal, because that issue's been so mishandled. I give those players all the credit in the world for using their platform to speak out. But instead of having vision and finding solution to a very complex issue in name, image, and likeness, they've just fought it tooth and nail to the end, and now it's going to be decided by politicians and judges. And I don't think they're going to have the nuance and the division envision to make the right decisions.
Pete, thank you. I can't thank you enough. What an outstanding conversation there. And you be well. And I wanted to ask you a million questions about the tournament. We'll do it the next time. Come back soon.
Paul, thanks for having me.
You got it. Wow. What an extraordinary piece of conversation that is, and will be. We will break here. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flail.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
We're back, and more of your phone calls. We've got a lot of guests, some great conversation, and let's try to catch up here and talk to Jim, who is in St. Louis. Hey, Jim.
Hi, Paul. I listen every day, and I've been listening all week, and the subject of inequities between the two tournaments has come up, and I know the weight room was a big issue from the start. And I was just wondering what other inequities there are.
The other one that I heard was the men were getting daily PCR tests, which are what you want for COVID, and the women, I think, were getting antigen tests, which are more rapid tests and are not as accurate. I think those were the two. There may have been some food discrepancies, but I believe that is the extent of it.
All right. I just heard about the weight room issue, and I really hadn't known what the other issues were, and I was just wondering. That was my question.
Well, I am glad you called. Thank you very much, Jim. Let's check in with Scott, who is out in Oregon. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Paul. Love your show. Listen,
thank you.
I'm just comparing kind of the NCAA basketball tournament to what we have in football. As you know, the Big Ten hasn't fared very well. I think they got 9 teams in, one still alive. And the Pac-12, if this had been a football tournament, wouldn't have gone. They would have been the Big Cuck conference left out. And of course, they got 4 of their 5 teams still playing. So I guess what it's making me wonder is, in football, I understand that we can't have as many games because of the wear and tear. But at the end of it, wouldn't it make more sense? Because I don't know where these stereotypes come from that make one conference during the course of a season look better, or everybody thinks they're better than others. But maybe instead of more conference games, because we know, I think all the football conferences have a championship game now. So really, all you need to know in the conference is which team's the best in the West or which team's the best in the East, and you'll find out for sure in the conference championship game which of those two is the best, because they're going to have that. But maybe instead of trying to play 9 or 10 conference games, what if you just played everybody in your division and maybe a team or two in the other, whatever conference we're talking about, and played more conference games, so that we would have a better sense.
Well, Scott, let me jump in here so we don't run out of time. Let's forget COVID year, because that was extraordinary circumstances. But most conferences play 9 games. The SEC plays 8. And part of the reason you play fewer is to make more money by having more home games. I am in favor of 9. I think it's legitimate. I don't think you really can go beyond that. I think we saw this year with 10. There's just too much wear and tear. In a league like the SEC, you never can catch your breath. And those 4 non-conference games usually are one big game, which is a marquee game. And the other 3, you go down, you layer it. But I don't see any of that changing. The only thing that could possibly change in the future, I think, would be more maybe in the SEC, one more conference game. Maybe the dissolution of divisions that comes up every year hasn't made a lot of progress yet. But thank you for the call. Really good to hear from you. Let's move along and talk to Belvedere, who is in Austin. Hello, Belvedere.
Well, hello, Field Marshal Feinberg. How are you doing?
Quite well. Thank you for asking.
Good. I had no idea that you had this Machiavellian effort to get Lane Kiffert fired. And I never thought I'd have heard the words Lane Kiffert, Miley Cyrus, and Paul Feinberg in the same sentence. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, I know there's been a lot of national attention on that. Lane and I have been texting all week. This is about the fourth time Lane has brought this up on the program for you media mavens out there who thought it was so bizarre that he did. He loves talking about it because it is a very funny story. And for some reason, he's infatuated with Miley Cyrus.
Well, I guess I can't blame him for that. But I was going to ask you, in your Machiavellian effort, who is next on your list?
Oh, I don't fire coaches anymore, Belvedere. I'm a kinder, and just to talk about a former Austin citizen, I'm a kinder and gentler talk show host now.
Okay. Let me ask you one more thing, if I could. There is a T-shirt that Mississippi is promoting, and I think this kind of they could get a little bit more creative, but it's a T-shirt with says "Get all aboard on the Lane train," ha ha ha. Or do you like the UT or Sarkazian's deal? There's a Sark in the water.
I like that. I like yeah. And by the way, Lane and Sark were very close friends.
Yeah.
In fact, the occasion that I described Lane as in the Miley Cyrus, 2 weeks later, we did that show from Seattle, and he stayed with Sark the night before the game day conversation. They are really close friends.
Yeah, that's cool. Very good. Well, I hope they get to play together one time. Or one in time soon. Or
that would be pretty cool. Well, hey, Belvedere, thank you. Hey, by the way, we have 30 minutes to go. I know we've been jam-packed with guests, and we have 30 minutes for you to jump on board. So if you want to give us a ring, your opportunity is now. 855-242-7285 is our number, and we are back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Back for the final 30 minutes. Great to have all of you here. And Cat Daddy is next.
Big Ball, looking good, sounding good. My wife, Bill Vita, said, honey, why don't you have asked Mr. Feinbaum how you doing? I said, I've been watching him for 3 hours on the herd and say 20 different times he's feeling all right. He looks all right to me anyway. But here's the story I got to tell you. Clemson Tom come in the store today buying lottery tickets. And he looked at me and said, Cat Daddy, have you heard the news about your Gamecocks? I said, foot. He said, y'all charging $5 for the spring game. I said, yeah, I know that. And y'all are only allowing 9,000 people in the stadium. I said, I know that. I said, well, it'll look just like the fourth quarter has for y'all the last 10 years, ain't it?
I like
and
that
then
one.
He comes up and tells me, Miss Feinbaum, he says, Cat Day, then we're going to have one entrance for you to go through, and you have to pay $5 in cash, and you know who's going to be working the ticket gate? I said, no, who? Will Muschamp. That fella drives me crazy, but that's the big talk around here. A bunch of people are mad about it, and of course, I think they're going it because they need money to pay off Muschamp. What you think?
Well, first of all, just do the math. 9,000 times 5, I don't think that's going to pay Muschamp off.
No, it ain't going to come close. But I just wonder if they're going to open up the alcohol this year. Have you heard anything about that?
About where? About letting
about
alcohol
being served.
I have not heard that. You like? Is that good or bad for you?
Well, that's bad for us because we do real good on Fridays and Saturdays. That's why people come out of town, spend the night over. But
Hey, Cat Daddy, what is the? I'm guessing it's bourbon, but what is the alcohol of choice at a South Carolina football game?
You get a bunch of them drinking gin and vodka and rum.
Really?
And you get some that drink Old Crow. Roman Rocket 2020, that's a wine we sell. And
I thought bourbon was the drink of choice down south.
Oh yeah, they drink the bourbon too. Oh yeah, I don't like bourbon myself.
No, I don't think I've had bourbon since I was in high school. What's the go to bourbon?
Evan Williams.
Evan Williams.
That sells a good bit. Also, Jack Daniels. That's about two of the biggest sellers we got there, Evan Williams, Jack Daniels. But they drink it up, especially during the football weekend.
Hey, Cat Daddy, I've always wondered this, and you're at a liquor store, so you know. Do fans drink more or less when they lose, like they have under Muschamp?
After the game, they drink a whole lot more than they did before.
I had a feeling that was your answer.
No, I got to be honest with you, Mr. Five. I've got to be honest with you. Well, you have a good day and stay safe up there, huh?
Hey, thank you, Cat Daddy. Always great to talk to Cat Daddy. Homer is in Georgia, and you are on the air. Hello, Homer. Homer, are you there? It's always disappointing. I'll try somebody else. We'll come back to Homer. Maybe he will. How about Jake? Up next. Hello, Jake.
Hey, Paul. Hey, listen, you know, I grew up to be a coach, and I had two uncles and a granddaddy that were the best storytellers in the world, and they loved Louis Grizzard, and they loved to hate Paul Feinbaum.
That's a good combo.
To you as a child in the early 80s, we all know you're a different individual now than you were then. You rubbed some feathers wrong back in the day, but it was such a good childhood in the fact that they told stories almost very reminiscent of what Louis Grizzard did. And I, to pay you a compliment, believe you did as well. I think you were in the pantheon of Louis Grizzard's, remnants. I do believe you're on that pedestal because I just believe y'all have a way of telling a story. Granted, you may not be as satirical as he is, but just being able to tell a story and keep someone's attention is a great. It's a great compliment to you and to your show.
Well, thank you. Hey, Jake, I'm really curious. So, going back to your childhood, forget Lewis. When they were talking about me, I mean, how bad did it get?
Well, Paul, listen. Be honest with you. I read you because they hated you. listen, I think in their own right, they respected you because as much mess as they would talk about you, they made sure they read you every chance they got. So, to your credit, that says a lot, but listen, it was, I had the two best uncles and grandfather for storytelling you could think of. I got to read Louis Grizzard, and I grew up in town with Paul Feinbaum writing stories about the SEC. So you can't beat that, Paul, and for that I'm eternally grateful.
Jake, thank you. I am equally grateful to have heard you talk about that. Thank you so much. That was amazing. Let's check in with Mike from Kentucky. Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Let me tell you this. I love Cat Daddy. He's the bomb, but I need to straighten you out on your bourbon versus Jack Daniels.
Okay.
Okay, here's the deal. Bourbon is either cured in oak or double oak barrels for a specific amount of time. And Jack Daniels, you go down to Lynchburg, which is off I-65 in the middle of Tennessee. That's just a blended whiskey. Bourbon on, you know.
Okay, Mike, I can assure you, what I know about liquor, you could put in a thimble, and you know, Cat Daddy said that, and I wondered about that because, so bourbon, yeah. For a really good bourbon, how long does it have to stay in that barrel?
Well, it depends on what you want. Of course, being in the barrel, the flavor is accentuated. And the flavor can be a smoky flavor, a caramel flavor.
Okay.
I live in Woodford County, which is where Woodford Reserve is made. And
okay.
And I go there frequently for party drinks and things like that.
Right.
But, you know, it depends on how old you want it to be. If it's double barreled, it can be in up to 8 to 10 years and even longer.
Is Kentucky, I don't want to ask you, I know Kentucky is known for bourbon. I mean, how did that happen? Do you have any idea?
Well, somebody got an idea on making mash and getting it fermented, and then he started adding flavors. Now, I'm here on the bourbon trail in Kentucky, which includes all the manufacturers, Jim Beam, you know, just all of them. But Woodford Reserve is probably the best bourbon you can buy, and that's my opinion now.
Now is
but, there's a definite difference between.
I was at a really fancy place in New York not long a year or two ago, and they were serving Knob Creek. Is that a Kentucky bourbon too?
Yes.
Okay.
Knob Creek is very popular. That's good stuff. It sure is. But you know,
I'm gonna have to get a bottle just to keep by my chair here. It might help me get through. That bourbon may be my new ticket.
You give me an address.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
So what was the name of the place that you live near again?
Woodford Reserve. It's
Woodford.
In Woodford,
okay.
County.
I have seen that on planes before. Or people ordering that. Not that.
You know You know what's right down the road from them?
What's that?
The horse farm where all the Triple Crown winners are at Ashland.
Oh really?
Oh yeah. Yeah. You go down the road about 2 miles. You make a right. You get through that gate. And all those Triple Crown winners are there. That's Ashford Stud, which is Coolmore. That's an Irish concern.
And if anyone wants to feel...
I've been here since 92, so...
If you want to feel insecure about yourself, just hear, and you can tell us, Mike, what the top stud fees are.
Well, it depends on how much the horse is, you know, showing in its progeny. Now, if it's had a bunch of grade one winners, stakes winners... You know, that price per shot, and when I say shot, that's a mate guaranteed foal.
Okay.
It can go as much as $500,000.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. Those horses got it better than I do.
Kentucky is a great... I'm moving to Kentucky. I like the sound of this.
Hey, if you really want a bottle of Double Oak Woodford Reserve, I'll send it to you if you give me an address.
Yeah, I appreciate that very much, by the way, Mike. I'll put you on hold here, and we are coming right back. Man, I'm gonna be in like Flint. We are coming back with much more right after this. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.